It's time for ER 101 with expert guests provided by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Here's Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we are talking about this serious issue. I have Adam Rosenberg has stayed on, and he's part of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center, which is an advocacy program. But now I want to welcome Dr. Chris Amato. He's assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, and he's a pediatric emergency physician in Morristown Memorial Hospital in Morristown, New Jersey. So welcome, Dr. Amato. Thanks for joining the conversation with us.
It's my pleasure, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, so, you know, we were just talking with Mr. Rosenberg, and it's a serious problem, and there's advocacy. But as a PEDS ER, what do you see when people come in, and what should they do? And then tell us a little bit about how you then link to these advocacy programs to continue the care for people and their kids.
Well, I think it's very important to recognize that child abuse comes in a myriad of forms. In fact, the most common form of abuse for children, at least, is mostly neglect. That's almost 78 to 79% of the times that the abuse is found. You know, the signs of physical abuse can be straightforward, but I don't want anyone to think that this is an easy diagnosis to make. And as Mr. Rosenberg alluded to earlier, you know, the importance that this is brought to discussion, that it's difficult to talk about, and in the emergency department, besides my focus, of course, is going to be taking care of the child, but there really has to be a family focus as well, because there's a lot of flared tempers, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of concern, there's a lot of fear. So there's a myriad of aspects that we have to focus on when we're taking care of children within a statement of alleged abuse.
You bring up a good point, and I just want to ask you, Dr. Amato, because sometimes even with sexual abuse, I mean, it could just be something like fondling. There's not a lot of physical evidence. So, you know, how do you deal with that as an pediatric emergency physician when there's not a lot of physical evidence?
Again, you know, I got to say that our role is to remain open, to listen to the child, to believe the child, to certainly listen to the parents and believe the parents. But when it comes to cases where it really could be just typical sexual play, which is a completely normal developmental process for children, one child touching another child, it's more of an exploration. But clearly, in this day and age, we have to take every single one of these cases as seriously as possible and investigate it as much as we can, but hopefully without causing further emotional trauma. We want to make sure that the child understands that they are safe, that it is safe for them to talk, because they're going to be very conflicted in the first place to even bring this up. And then to see how their parents react is only going to make them more concerned, like, you know, did I mess up? Am I going to be in trouble for bringing this up?
I have to build on Dr. Amato's point, Lee, is that the ERs work closely with the child advocacy centers. So there's one in Morristown, New Jersey. There's one in many communities. Often there is no physical evidence, and juries like to see physical evidence. We grew up on this whole CSI Law and Order Society. So ultimately, the evidence really becomes the child's interview. And at a child advocacy center, all the investigating parties, medical, law enforcement, social services, prosecutors, come together so they do one coordinated, talented interview to find out what the kid has to say under a controlled setting. With a structured set of questions so that no one can accuse us of putting words in the kid's mouth. Because, as Dr. Amato points out, parents are confused. There's a lot of tension going on. Oftentimes, the child's accusing somebody who this family loves and trusts. And it's a very difficult accusation. So we want to be able to have a very controlled way to get those answers out as quickly as possible. And that's what the Child Advocacy Center does.
Go ahead, Dr. Amato. So how often do you actually, I mean, do you think that you see this in an ER? And how often are you coordinating with these centers to do these?
Well, I mean, you know, it is every state has their own specific laws, but there is a federal law that demandates that if there's any suspicion of any kind of abuse, that this is reported. So I will tell you that fortunately it's not frequent. But by the same token, it is not infrequent. And I know that's kind of evasive, but the reality is that, you know, there's over 3 million referrals that are made annually, and that comprises over 6 million children that they're talking about. So there is a significant amount that are referred, but not necessarily by the ER or the local pediatrician. These are referred by teachers, by police officers, by lawyers, by other people that are involved with that family, as well as, of course, the community itself, whether it be a neighbor or you know, just a local adult. The issue is just like Mr. Rosenberg indicated, is that the ER is a safe place, and then to bring their child or the physician to refer the child. We are going to work in concert with the child protective service agencies that we're so fortunate to have, because we want to offer any kind of resource that we can, not only to the child to make sure that the child is safe, but also to the family, just to kind of understand and deal with the emotions that they're dealing with.
These become embarrassing issues for families, and it shouldn't be. And we need to have
Absolutely.
These families. Certainly, if a child suddenly developed a chronic disease or had, you know, broken their leg, the family would rush and take the child to the emergency room. The family would pick up the phone and get help. And yet when child abuse is discovered, oftentimes we try and deal with it internally, or we'll just shuffle this family member there and we'll deal with it on our own. And families aren't equipped by themselves to be able to provide that sort of response. You can't set a bone in your own kitchen. So why should we then deprive these children of that same network of care that exists out there when it comes to child abuse? And we just have to have a little bit of faith in the system and activate it. And these kids can't get help unless people pick up the phone and report it and take action.
Right. And Dr.
Absolutely.
Armato, do you, so are there some sort of warning signs? Say a kid comes in, I mean, I remember as an ER, you know, as an ER doc, sometimes, you know, women with domestic violence would come in and it would seem like a kind of a meaningless problem they were having. But when you delved in, there were some signs that, you know, I could detect and say, oh, well, maybe this was the way that they could get out of the house. And I imagine the same thing. And there is a big overlap with family violence, domestic violence. I mean, that's like another show. We'd have to do a whole show on that. But anyway.
Absolutely. You know, in terms of warning signs, I think the easiest thing to say is that, you know, the dumbest question is the one that I'm not asked. And much like we do now, is that we ask about, do you feel safe at home with women or with actually anybody that's interviewed or triaged in ERs now? It's part and parcel of the evaluation to discuss those aspects. When it comes to abusive injuries, we're looking for things that don't make sense, unexplained or poorly explained injuries, certainly injuries that don't correlate with the developmental age of the child. And the easiest example that I can give is an infant that does not walk as of yet. It does not do any kind of major rolling as of yet. So it's less than 6 months for sitting. And they're coming in with a fractured leg. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. I could give you a dozen different examples of patients that I've had where the injured part doesn't make sense, or the story that they've given me doesn't make sense. And when it comes to that, my role is to be an advocate for the child, is to be a voice for this child who cannot speak for themselves, and I'm going to mobilize the services to just make sure that that child is safe, and that the environment that they're growing up in, or that they're staying in at this time, is a haven, is where they can grow and be loved and be safe.
Yeah, that, and I think that's so important. And I think what's great and what's happening now, even in the 16 plus years that I've been practicing emergency medicine, not to date myself, is that we are having agencies like Adams working with Dr. Armato, and that we are working together as a community, and we're recognizing these issues of violence and family violence. So this has been informative. I want to thank both of my guests, and we'll have to have a whole show that deals with these issues coming up in the future.